This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutan. With me, Kusu Chuang and Joyce Goh. Now we look south to Australia. Down under, the Australian federal budget will be revealed this week. But it also on the horizon is an election said to be due between the 4th of August this year and the 18th of May 2019. On the line, we have Kingsley Jones, founder and chief investment officer at Jevons Global in Sydney. Kingsley, thank you so much for joining us this morning. What are markets predicting in terms of the federal budget?
Rising tax receipts due to the improving terms of trade and rising commodity prices look set to deliver a budget windfall. And the obvious areas for budget largesse ahead of those elections is personal tax cuts. We'll also likely see further federal infrastructure spending commitments that will be billed as reducing congestion in cities, which is certainly evident in places like Sydney. Some of the more political difficult areas, though, like corporate tax cuts, might well be shelved. And on health spending, we'll probably see some adjustment to Medicare, perhaps in the area of GP visit charges, since they need to raise some money to pay for the National Disability Insurance Scheme. Overall, it's likely to be a pre-election bid for votes, with infrastructure spend targeted towards those states where the coalition needs to score electoral points.
Kingsley, you know, could you help us understand the conversation that's happening in Australia around revenue? I understand, and this is an assessment by observers, that you know the Australian economy is much more global. It's a digital economy, but they have an aging population problem, which means the tax base is going to be shrinking. And there's also sluggish wage growth, which makes future predictions of revenue even more precarious. It's said that there's never been a better time for tax reform, but will it happen?
Well, I think we'll just have to wait and see. I mean, look, one of the big factors in the last 5 years is that obviously there was a big boom in mining as a result of Chinese expansion in the early 2000s. And then we had a bit of a slowdown, which is quite natural. The budget position deteriorated a lot then. And there was a belief that the economy would rebalance towards some of these newer areas that you mentioned. That's certainly been happening. I mean, startup activity is high. But what's quite amazing about this latest period is that what's really repaired the budget is the restoration of mining and energy as an export sector through higher prices.
Hi, Kingsley, Joyce here. So the Reserve Bank has recently warned that tighter lending standards will likely leave some borrowers exposed to surging repayments. Is this a short to midterm concern for the market?
Well, look, it is a midterm concern. I think the RBA has been on this theme for some time, and we think for a good reason. There's been a lot of people who are entering into property transactions with interest-only loans. And, of course, Australian housing prices are pretty high compared to incomes, both in absolute terms compared around the world, but also compared to history. Real income growth has been weak, as was mentioned before. So, there is a real risk of higher mortgage rates due to international financial conditions, and that could really cause the economy to hit a bit of a soft spot. Hot markets like Sydney and Melbourne have certainly cooled, and some are in negative territory. And the risks there, I think, are most acute in high-rise apartments, especially those with floor areas below 50 square metres. Now, that's not unusual. It's always been the case in Australia that they're the first category to get hit. Overall, the Australian market, though, is not overbuilt. You know, we've had high population growth. There'll be some indigestion with overextended investors in poor categories of speculative real estate, but we don't think it's going to lead to an outright collapse.
Kingsley, what's your sense of the direction of the dollar versus the US dollar, given the fact that the US has been on a strengthening curve against the Aussie in recent weeks? I think right now it's the Aussie is up 75 cents to the US dollar. What's your outlook for the Aussie?
I think actually the Aussie is probably going to range trade in a fairly narrow range between the low 70s and the high 70s. And 75 is probably our central estimate as to where it should be. I'd point out that over time, under relatively normal financial conditions, the Australian dollar has actually tended to track gold, which itself has been quite steady at this time. So, of course, there's been talk about US dollar strength, but we think that's really just a bit of a correction from former US dollar weakness. The US dollar index is down about 6% over a year, although it's obviously been up some over the last few weeks. We think this is probably the beginning of a range trade around the US dollar, simply because obviously higher interest rates is providing upward pressure. but also fears on trade sanctions and the like is putting some downward pressure on views on the global economy. So we think it'll probably be a bit of a range trade.
Yeah, Kingsley, just going back earlier to what you were talking about, the whole commodities recovery, I mean, who's buying Australia's metals and mining and oils right now? I mean, obviously, the rally in the last few years has really been driven by this whole issue of the whole commodity boom.
Well, yeah, I mean, clearly. So China is still the major buyer. What tends to happen over time, though, if you look at the history of these sorts of expansions, because this is not really the first time it's happened, you tend to get a bit of a shift over time in the composition of the commodities, imports and metals. So, you know, the early stages of expansion are often things like concrete and steel as you build cities and so on. But as the economy deepens and it moves into more elaborate manufactures, you tend to see the base metals, particularly in stainless steel and other areas, get a bit of a pickup. And then the major area for technological strength is really the battery metals and those used in aerospace and defense. And we think this cycle will be a strong one for those. Well, that's not clearly evident yet. We think there's probably more to come because we've got defense and civil aviation growing, not only in China, but around the world. So we'll probably see a bit of a change in the composition of the upswing this time. But we still think there's clear demand for metals around the world.
Kingsley, speaking about China, this week President Donald Trump will meet with U.S. officials who went to China to negotiate with Beijing over trade. And the Trump administration had demanded a $200 billion cut in the Chinese trade surplus with the U.S., sharply lower tariffs and advanced technology subsidies. So can we expect markets to be impacted further from this?
Well, you know, the U.S. trade deficit has a lot to do with a hollowing out in the U.S. production system that happened over some decades. And that followed from cheap consumer credit. You know, I'm talking about the period before the GFC, and then offshoring to boost profit margins at home for U.S. firms. That's kind of played out now. I mean, even in China, the rising labor rates means that China itself is actually starting to play something of that game in shifting its production offshore. So, you know, Trump may make those demands, but we think that the problem really is, does the U.S. have the capacity to fill the demand that presently is being supplied by China? It can't right now, and it'll probably take some time for that rebalancing. So in many respects, we think that these demands, they maybe get good headlines, but, you know, the substance of it is that it's going to take a lot longer than simply a negotiation to have a reversal of that position. So, look, we think that markets will certainly be impacted by the news flow, but initiatives in China like One Belt, One Road and also the Made in China 2025 plan, the modernizing technology, they'll probably be driving the patterns of trade between China and other nations. And, of course, the U.S. is involved, but it's not, we think, the major driver of what's going on.
Yeah, Kingsley, glad you brought up the whole notion of offshore production, because that's exactly where the whole Chinese economic engine seems to be going with the One Belt, One Road initiative. I mean, in Malaysia, we're seeing a lot of new projects being announced, and I guess a lot more utility of those exact commodities you were discussing earlier. How much of this whole OBOR initiative will really drive China's growth and, by correlation, Australia's growth going forward?
Well, look, opinions differ on this, as I'm sure you're aware if you look at the news. In our view, it's actually quite a rational plan that China's pursuing. I mean, the nuts and bolts of it is that, as you know, I mean, they have a lot of excess capacity to build infrastructure. I mean, roads, bridges, railways, all that sort of thing. And One Belt, One Road, in a kind of simplistic view, is a way to deploy that industrial capacity in places outside of China to do the same thing there, build roads, bridges, and so on. And that's beneficial, provided that you see an overall economic gain in those regions. Now, we think that increasing trade through offshoring is part of that. So in some respects, this is a little bit like a Marshall Plan for China post, you know, if you remember back in history, post-World War II, the U.S. actually went on a big lending program to help Europe and other places rebuild. There's no rebuilding here. It's just really building for the first time in some of these countries. But we think it's quite positive. Now, the counter to that, of course, is that, you know, in the politics of this, many view this as an expansionary policy that ultimately, you know, has some military implications. There's some of that, but we don't really think that's the overriding ambition that China has in this program.
Thank you so much, Kingsley. That was Kingsley Jones, founder and chief investment officer at Jevons Global. We'll be back with more business news and analysis. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.